On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, opening day is almost here, and it's time to give you our bold predictions. Yes, we got spicy with it. I give you 15 bold predictions for the American League. Jake gives you 15 bold predictions for the National League teams. And then we talk to Orioles star Gunnar Henderson, special interview ahead of opening day, being the first Gunner in Major League history, what it's like to be on the cover of MLB The Show. Finally, we conduct our opening day starter draft, who can have the lowest collective ERA on opening day. And then we give you our postseason and awards picks. Opening day is almost here, friends. Let's do it. It's Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world whose predictions are actually bold. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And the rest of you are cowards.
A wonderfully welcoming way to begin our opening day episode of Baseball Barbacast, where we will give you 30 bold predictions. I will do the American League. Jake will do the National League. We have not shared these with each other. I have not shared these with anybody. So we'll see how this goes. We're just gonna do it live. We also have another interview. Gunnar Henderson, ever heard of him? He's gonna come on the podcast. Another MLB The Show cover star talking to us about being on the cover of a video game and being the first Gunner in baseball history. Gunnar was fantastic, and I think you guys will enjoy that conversation. And then our third chunk will be one of our favorite annual exercises, the opening day starter draft. We will draft the pitchers who will open the season on Thursday and Friday, if you're in Tampa. And we will see which one of our teams has the better ERA. And then at the very end, we will finally give you our postseason and award picks, which are already on the website at yahoosports.com. So you can go see them if you don't want to wait until the end of the podcast. But we are most excited for all the other parts because we had to put in all this other fun stuff because we don't like making postseason picks or award picks because it feels silly. Bold predictions, way more fun. But before we get to that, Jake, I understand you have something else you want to do.
This is our opener this week. Look, I know that maybe some of you have not listened this offseason. I know that maybe some of you have not even listened to the division preview shows. I understand it. I don't like myself either. And I understand that there are some of you now just tuning in as the baseball season begins to rear up. My father, for instance, the other day said he just found out that Alex Bregman was on the Red Sox. And so what that made me feel like I needed to do was to go full hero ball, toss me the rock, put 2 minutes on the clock, and I'm going to run everybody through it. 3, 2, 1. The Toronto Blue Jays failed to extend Vlad Guerrero. He's going to hit free agency this winter, command a massive contract. If they miss the playoffs and he leaves, it's embarrassing. That's Toronto. The Tampa Bay Rays, Hurricane blew the roof off their stadium. They're playing at the Yankee spring training facility. They have a very exciting young pitching staff. Speaking of exciting young pitching staffs, the Orioles could use one of those. The Boston Red Sox, invigorating offseason. They did sign Alex Bregman and acquired Garrett Crochet from the Red Sox. He's an ace. Dark horse World Series pick. The Yankees pooped their pants in the World Series. Juan Soto left, and they kind of pivoted. That's really it. The White Sox, they suck. Lost most games ever last year. Won't be a whole lot better. New manager, though. Minnesota Twins, embarrassing collapse in the second half. Did nothing over the winter. This team is the equivalent of a big sigh. Detroit Tigers, reigning Cy Young. Tarek Skubal is incredibly fun to watch. As is Bobby Witt Jr. He's really what you need to know about the Kansas City Royals. The Guardians went to the ALCS last year, traded away two key offensive pieces. Can the savvy low-budget operation keep pumping up playoff appearances? TBD. Angels, Mike Trout plays right field now. They have the longest playoff drought in baseball, and that's not going to end. The A's are in Sacramento this year after abandoning Oakland. They did spend a little bit of money and might be entertaining. The Mariners don't want to spend any money. They did just extend their franchise catcher, Cal Raleigh. Great rotation. Is it enough? Rangers, floppy, saggy, sad title defense a year ago, but Jacob deGrom is healthy. Astros, end of an era? Question mark. Jose Altuve plays left field now because he was so bad at second. That's the American League. Got it, Jordan? Good? Understand?
Got it. Keep going.
A Okay, National League. The Marlins, they suck. They're going to have a historically bad offense, although the return of Sandy Alcantara, who won the 2022 Cy Young, is one thing to care about until he gets traded for prospects at the deadline. The Nats have a trio of youngsters in James Wood, CJ Abrams, and Dylan Cruz that could be game changers and bring this franchise back to relevance. The Mets gave Juan Soto the bag. The rotation is not very good. Can they recreate the magic from 2024? The Phillies are identical, essentially the same team, but every year that window gets a little bit closer to closing. It is a contract season for Schwarber and Real Muto. Braves, Strider, Spencer, Acuna, Ronald Jr., both missed most of last season. Getting back a top five pitcher and top five hitter is a good thing, in my opinion. Pirates, Paul Skeens, generational, but can one ace change the fortunes of a franchise unwilling to invest in itself? We'll find out. St. Louis Cards, they were the only team not to sign a single MLB free agent. If they have a bad first half, we could see a big tear down in the loo. Cincinnati Reds, just watch Ellie De La Cruz do everything. I have no idea what to think about the Reds. No team in baseball confuses me more. I wish I could help you. The Brewers, surprise division champs a year ago. Christian Yelich, who you know is going to DH now for the most part. Jackson Chourio, young, exhilarating outfielder. He'll challenge for MVPs. The Cubs have not won a playoff game since 2017. Their president of baseball operations, Jed Hoyer, his contract's up at the end of the year. They're desperate. Desperate to win. The Colorado Rockies are in the mountains vibing and selling beer. The San Francisco Giants have a new president of baseball operations. It's Buster Posey. They have Justin Verlander now and Willie Adames, but we have no idea what to make of Posey. San Diego Padres, their ownership situation seems somewhat resolved, but boy oh boy, they have so many ugly contracts. The Arizona Diamondbacks signed Corbin Burns because he wanted to live near his house. And you know about the Dodgers.
All right. We did it. 5 minutes. Offseason in 5 minutes.
That was
nice
5 minutes?
Nice work, Jake. A little about, but just about.
All right.
So hopefully you saved some people some time.
You can
send that to our high school friends that don't follow baseball in the offseason or the season, for that matter. But I appreciated that. Let's get to our 30 bold predictions. The way we're going
can
to
you
do
go
this,
first?
By the way.
Can you go first so I can catch my breath?
By the way, yeah, so the way this is going to work, Jake and I have prepared these without sharing them with each other.
Yeah.
We did this exercise a couple years ago for our YouTube channel. You can go back and watch that. And then at the end of the season, we graded them. The way we grade them in the moment is if your prediction is bold, which is just like, yeah, it's good. Good one. Heroic, which is that's nuts. That is just you're pushing it beyond even the scope of the exercise. Or cold, which is that's not brave at all. Like you can do better than that.
And it is better to be heroic than cold, right? It is, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. To me, there is a line here where it is like that's wild, but you have to at least be like, hmm. So I tried to straddle. I did my best. I'm sure I will end up with some cold ones. I have not shared this with anyone. I know you test drove this with some of our friends in the industry. So you got some feedback.
I want to say, what makes a good bold prediction, like these need to be possible, right?
Yes.
Shohei Ohtani 100 home runs is a bad bold prediction. Yes. As is Dodgers miss playoffs. I think is a that's fine. I think that's probably actually okay.
You can do that.
But sure. Like a bad one is Red Sox win World Series or Nationals make playoffs, right?
I don't think I have any involving mine are mostly individual and some circumstantial. Okay. But you know what? We're going to have fun with this. So the way we're going to do it is we're going to alternate divisions so we can each go five at a time. I don't really know what order I'm going to go in each division. Some of them are more simple than others, and we're gonna ride here. So again, when we did this a couple years ago, I did the National League and Jake did the American League. So we switched it up this time and we will begin in the American League East. We're gonna start it off. Yeah.
I'm already laughing.
We're gonna start off real simple. This is a straight and to the point. I think you might go cold on this. I don't care. Ben Rice 4-homer game. Ben Rice, who did have a 3-home run game last year.
For what team? You have to say the team.
Oh, New York Yankees. Ben Rice, 4-homer game. This is what I will be caring about. Ben Rice coming off a fantastic spring training. We'll be getting plenty more plate appearances since Giancarlo Stanton's elbows do not work. Because he had a 3-homer game last year, because he looks fantastic this spring, and because his perfectly pull-happy swing approach will also get to play at Steinbrenner Field multiple times this season, I'm going that Ben Rice hits the first, gives us the first 4-home run game since 2017 when JD Martinez and Scooter Gennett did it with the Super Juice Ball. Ben Rice, 4-homer game.
Bold. If you had said Ben Rice, 4-homer game on the road against Tampa in Steinbrenner Field, that's heroic.
That would have been, again, some of mine are more specific than others. The Steinbrenner part is helping my chances here, but I'm not going to get greedy. I'm just going to go 4-homer game. He could do it in the Bronx. Bold. Thank you. Sticking with the home runs here, we go to the Baltimore Orioles. We talk about how they have moved the fence back in. We talk about how that might be good for their hitters, but not so good for their pitchers, their elderly pitching staff.
Not good for their pitchers.
Orioles pitchers and hitters combine for 500 home runs. Okay. Now, this has only happened in the 2019 juice ball season. Okay. But I think the Orioles were second in baseball in homers last year. I think they will hit even more, even without Anthony Santander. I think the fence coming in, I think more at-bats for Kerstad, Westberg healthy, Adley healthier, better. Jackson Holliday doesn't stink. I think they lead baseball in homers with like 270, 280. Remember, the major league record's like 308. And then I think Sugano, Morton, Kyle Gibson, Kremer are just serving them up like it's, you know, 2019, 2021 all over again. So it's hard. It's hard. 500 is, I think, again, it's so many home runs.
Yeah.
But for context, last year they combined for 410 between the two. So heroic. I'm getting 90 more both ways.
Heroic. Okay. Great job. This is a perfect bold prediction.
All right. Awesome. Here we go. Boston Red Sox. We have a lot to get through, so I don't want to ruminate too much. We'll pick up the pace here. Boston Red Sox, another team accomplishment here. I was thinking, oh, something with the Netflix doc. Yeah, whatever. We'll keep it statistical here. Boston Red Sox set the record for most doubles in a season. The Red Sox in Fenway Park basically lead the league in doubles every year. Last year, they were first for like the fifth time in the last 7 years with 311. The major league record is 376 by the 2008 Rangers. And I think with the young guys coming up, with Bregman, with Devers, with Healthy Casas, with Yoshida's even going to get some mix in there, we're going to the top of the doubles list. 377 doubles for the 2025 Red Sox.
Bolt. Just regular bolt. Good job.
Perfect. I'm saving my Rays one for last. Toronto Blue Jays. This one is fun. I'm deciding on the fly where I want to set the number. All right, here we go. A lot of talk about Vlad Jr. A lot of directions you could go with Vlad Jr.
Sure.
I'm going to shine some light on his teammate. And I'm going to say, not only is Bo Bichette going to bounce back, he's going to have the kind of season to where he signs a $250 million contract next offseason. Bo Bichette bounces back, $250 million contract.
Cold.
Cold. All right. People aren't even $250 million. Oh, you know what? Okay, fine. How about 300? I'll go.
You can't do it. Nope. Okay, can't. Nope. Fine.
I cannot do it.
Next.
All right.
Cold.
Okay, fine. All right. People act like Bo Bichette doesn't exist anymore. And I think he's going to be awesome to get paid. You know what I should have done? He gets more money than Vlad Jr. Tampa Bay Rays. Here we go. Jake, one of the storylines we cared the least about last year was what? Involves one of the players on the Tampa Bay Rays now, who wasn't on the team last year.
Danny Jansen.
Here's my bold prediction. It happens again.
Amazing.
The same thing happens. Amazing. Again. Not with Danny Jansen necessarily, but because of all the rainouts that are going to happen for the Rays in the first half, there will be a suspended game. And there will be a trade involving a player, and sometime in the second half, they will come back and complete the game, and the exact same thing will happen, and we will have to pretend like it is a cool thing again.
heroic. Our hatred of the Danny Jansen playing for both teams in the same game thing confused quite a few people because we like fun. But this is perfect. Great job. Okay. Good
All job. Right. There heroic. You go. There's my AL East. Let's go to the NL East. Go ahead.
All right. Washington Nationals. Mike Soroka receives one Cy Young vote.
Oh, okay. So even if we're going generous, that is, you can only vote for five, I believe. So will one BBWAA member believe that Mike Soroka was one of the five best pitchers in the league? Man, I think I am going to go. One. Yeah, no, just one. Oh, wait, it can't be more than one.
One.
I'm sort of optimistic about Soroka, but I think this is heroic.
Mike Soroka has started 18 games since the pandemic began.
Yeah. Part of me, the reason I wants to go bold is because pitching and Cy Youngs are the hardest to predict and like, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
But I'll go heroic. I'll give you some bravery there.
Atlanta Braves. The long-locked, wet-haired Grant Holmes gets to meet Danny McBride, a.k.a. Kenny Powers. Mm-hmm. Kenny Powers of Eastbound and Down fame. Grant Holmes looks very close to Kenny Powers. In an article on The Athletic last year from Braves reporter Dave O'Brien, Grant Holmes said he would love to meet Kenny Powers one day. I'm predicting that at some point this season, Danny McBride, who I believe lives in South Carolina, drives down to Truist Park and takes a picture during batting practice with Grant Holmes in the Eastbound and Down uniform.
This is great. He's like from the South. So I think, I don't know if he's a Braves fan, but I think that really helps here.
Yeah.
But it is awfully specific. It does require Grant Holmes to remain good and relevant, which I know there's some optimism there. But for the specificity and the fact that I have no idea what Danny McBride is up to, I am going to still say heroic.
Okay, great.
Solid.
Miami Marlins. Valente Belozo 200 inning season.
Okay. So Valente Belozo, one of the few players who debuted last season who I had never heard of him before he appeared in the major leagues. His career high in the minors is 110. So yeah, I mean, even if the Marlins are terrible and he's the guy soaking up the innings, 200 is outrageous. So heroic.
Mets. Jose Iglesias throws out ceremonial first pitch in the playoffs.
Ooh. Okay, so this probably requires him to get like released very quickly and essentially stop caring about like he's just like focused on his pop career. Nah, I mean, I think bowl, I guess.
Okay.
See, again, it's like that's really betting against him playing much for the Padres. And then he's just like goes back to becoming a Mets mascot. So
he could just finish up on any other team that's not a playoff team. I'm just, can you imagine NLDS game two and they just cut the lights and it just, oh my God, starts and he walks out.
Yeah. Post game. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good. I'll say, I will still say heroic because he's still on a team. If he hadn't been signed, I think this would be bold. I think it would be more likely.
Okay. Phillies. Brandon Marsh, haircut.
I don't know, man. Like, maybe he just kind of decides. Like, that could just, sometimes guys just change their mind and they decide, all right, we're done. We're done with
this. Look, struggling against left-handed pitching, got to change
something
up. Would
Brandon Marsh do this? I think it's more likely than Valente Belozo 200 innings.
Do you? What's more likely, Brandon Marsh haircut or Brandon Marsh shaves beard?
Shaves beard, I think. I'm going to say bold. I think this is good. I think this is a good one. I don't think this is impossible.
Cool.
All right, that's NL East.
Yeah.
AL Central. All righty, here we go. Minnesota Twins. Peyton Eales, who is one of our favorite minor leaguers. He is 5'5". He was an indie ball a year ago, and he played his way to AAA. Peyton Eales will lead the Minnesota Twins in stolen bases this season. Peyton Eales is injured right now.
Bold.
Okay.
Bold.
He's injured right now. The Twins were last in steals last year. So I just need him to like get up in July and start running because they don't know what else on that team can run.
The Twins are last in steals because no one on the team can walk because they're all hurt.
Peyton Eales, again, in Twins fashion, is injured right now, but hopefully he will be back and he will be leading the Twins in steals in the second half. Peyton Eales, if you don't know about him, Foolish Baseball did a great video all about his story. Chicago White Sox.
Sean Burke.
No, I ain't doing anything with how good they're going to be. Sean Burke, their opening day starter for the second year in a row, was like, whoa, how about this? Lower ERA than Garrett Crochet this season.
Heroic. Great job. This is a great bold prediction. This is a great bold prediction because it won't happen, but it could happen. And it's why would you say something so true yet so bold with so much courage? This is a great job.
Great. I won't expound any further. All right. Here's one where it's like, where do I set the number? But it's pretty straightforward. I had, a niche one with Mikel Garcia's stealing bases, but my Kansas City Royals one is very simple. Bobby Witt Jr., 12 F4 season. This has not been accomplished since Barry Bonds. Aaron Judge has reached 11 in his two unbelievable seasons recently, but 12 F4 is like 10 seasons ever. But I am basically just going with his trajectory, which is improving by 4 wins each of the past 3 seasons. And I will say that Bobby Witt Jr., who becomes a better base stealer and walks a little bit more, and I don't know, he continues to be the best shortstop in baseball and plays 162 games, 12 F4 for Bobby Witt.
Regular bold. Good job.
Right. Okay, that's fine.
Everybody Detroit can Tigers. Always get better, right? Everyone in life can always improve. You've never Detroit truly Tigers. Hit your ceiling.
Detroit Tigers. This one's also pretty straightforward, but I think it's a fun one. The Tigers will have 3 all-star starting pitchers. Tarek Skubal, Jackson Jobe, Casey Mize. Now, 3 all-star starting pitchers is rare, but not impossible. In fact, we saw it 2 teams last year. The Phillies and Braves both had it. But other than that, I mean, it's not... This doesn't happen often, and I think doubling down with Jobe, all-star as a rookie, and Casey Mize as a breakout pick, plus Tarek Skubal, what do you think?
I'm on the border between cold and bold just because Tarek Skubal is a layup, right? So you're really predicting here is 2 other ones, right? Yeah, which is Jackson Jobe and Casey Mize. I'll give you bold because you specified who they're going to be. I would almost say Flaherty is like a more likely selection. So I'll give you a regular straight up bold.
That's fine. All right. Cleveland Guardians is one of my favorite ones. This one took me a while to come up with, but I like this one. Austin Hedges. All right. So if you look at Austin Hedges as a hitter and you essentially like lower the plate appearance minimum to whatever closest 100 number of plate appearances that he got. So some years he has 300, 200, whatever. He has been one of the 3 worst hitters for 5 consecutive seasons, okay? And my prediction is Austin Hedges will not be one of the 5 worst hitters in baseball this year with whether he gets 100 plate appearances or 200 plate appearances, set the minimum. He will not be a bottom 5, even 5 hitter after being a bottom 3, in fact, bottom 1 for 2 out of the last 4 seasons. What do you think?
Cold. I think baseball is so random and in a
I provided the evidence that Austin Hedges is a real bad at it.
I'll say cold. I'll put money on this. I'll put real money.
Where would I have had to set the line? You can give me cold. It's okay. Where would I have had to set bottom 10?
10, again, I think. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
10. Do you want to put some coin on this? $3.
I will say the wild thing about Hedges is like He actually did. He had a in 2018 with the Padres, because I was going to do like an Austin Hedges home run one. And then I was like, man, he hit 18 homers in 2017, even with a juice ball.
He can get it in the air.
There you go. AL Central.
St. Louis Cardinals. Nolan Arenado hits a playoff home run.
Okay. This one, this is sort of similar to one of the ones we did a couple years ago. Now, I think this is just regular bold.
But you're doubling. Yeah, there's two different paths to success here. One is he gets traded to a good team in homers, and the other is the Cardinals surprise and make the playoffs. Now, both of those things could happen, but then he might just not hit a homer in the playoffs, which is also very much a possibility. All right, Cubs. If you like specificity, this one's for you. Pete Crow Armstrong steals home against Yuki Matsui on Jackie Robinson Day.
Okay. It's Cubs Padres. Why Matsui? Does he suck at holding runners?
Huh. Good question, Jordan. No pitcher in baseball takes a longer amount of time.
I see.
He's like a top three slow worker. And PCA elite speed.
Yep.
If a white guy steals home on Jackie Robinson Day, is it a tribute worth
That's true.
But I'm going to say specific here. PCA in honor of Jackie Robinson steals home against Yuki Matsui.
And he basically says after the game, like, that's why I ran. You know, it wasn't
the Cubs are going to be up. They'll be up like by four in the eighth. Ooh. And like he'll be on third. And it's like,
this is interesting because let's say they're up like 15, you know, does Mike Schilt, can you get angry at someone for stealing home on Jackie Robinson Day? Even if,
oh, no,
you see what I mean? Like Mike Schilt might have to be like, well, yeah, it was a good tribute. This is heroic for the specificity. I love it. Nice work.
I was like, I wanted to do a PCA steals home one. And then I looked at who the slowest workers were. And then I saw his Matsui. And I was like, oh, because it has to be a lefty thrower, right?
Yeah.
He's like the slowest lefty thrower because the lefty's back is the third. Then I was like, when do they play Jackie Robinson Day in San Diego? He gets booed. All right. Pirates. Paul Skeens' dog, Rue, throws out a first pitch.
Oh,
we saw Ohtani's dog. Decoy do this last year, having enough juice to get your dog to nuzzle a ball towards home
and to train it. I mean, that's the part that it's, I think, more, I think it's less likely that Paul Skeens and I assume Livy Dunn also, are they co-parenting this dog?
Yeah, dude.
So I'm less confident that this dog will be trained to the same degree that Decoy is. With that said, like, I think this is bold, if not heroic, because I don't think Paul Skeens is here for the bits. He's not.
Do you think Ohtani was here for the bits?
Yeah. Are you kidding me? That's all he cares. His dog is like, he cares about that more than playing defense. You know, like this guy, absolutely. He's there for the, he loves it. I don't think I can't see Paul like going out to home plate before a game. I mean, maybe on an off day in between starts. So I don't know. Maybe it is heroic, but I'll go bold. That's fine.
The Cincinnati Reds. Mm-hmm. Elly De La Cruz becomes the sixth player in MLB history to win an MVP while simultaneously leading the league in strikeouts.
Oh, I thought you were going to say for a losing team. okay. Interesting.
Now, Jordan, you may be thinking.
Six? Hold on a second. Six players?
Six players in MLB history.
Then, first of all, this is your first cold of the day. I think this is a pretty cold one. He just did it. He just led the league in strikeouts.
I know.
And then he finished eighth, right? But I think he can still strike out and still up the production elsewhere and be the best player on maybe a Reds team that's good. And yeah, so I think this is cold, but it's a good one. Okay. It's still a good one. Who else? I guess who are the other ones that have done that? Aaron Judge,
Babe Ruth in 2023, psych, 1923, Hack Wilson in 1930, Jimmy Fox in 1933, Joe Gordon in 1942, Mo Vaughn in 1995.
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah.
So it's like four old geezers and Mo Vaughn in 1995. I
mean, how many times did Babe Ruth strike out? Like
90?
80? Okay. All right. But I'm still saying that this is cold, mostly because the way you're going, I don't know how many of these I'm going to be able to say cold. And I think this is cold. I think relatively this is cold.
Milwaukee Brewers. They trade for Wilson Contreras at the deadline to pair with William Contreras, and they have the Contrarians together.
Oh, man. Okay. I think the contract alone makes this heroic and in division.
I knew you would say that. I knew you would say that. I knew you would say the contract. And so he is due 18.5 mil, okay, for next two seasons. That's what Rhys Hoskins is making right now to play first base, which is what Contreras is going to be doing.
That's the problem right now. You're going to have both of those guys.
This prediction rests on either Hoskins or Christian Yelich getting hurt, basically, because those two spots are filled, first base and DH. Not the worst prediction. Don't like to predict people getting hurt.
But I'm going to
say the Brewers have two Contreras's.
It's still heroic. I do like this, but fun storyline, but pretty tough to get there.
Okay. Your turn. AL West.
AL West. Okay. I don't really know what order I want to do these, so let's start with a very simple one. Houston Astros. This is a layup. Cam Smith hits more home runs than Kyle Tucker. This one is certainly helped by Cam Smith being on the opening day roster. However, as godlike as Cam Smith has been in spring training, and we have Mauricio Dubon calling him the next 60 homer guy, which certainly inspired me. Kyle Tucker's never been a 60 homer guy. But what Kyle Tucker has been is essentially exactly 30 home runs every year. He had, I think, 30, 30, 29, and then last year in a shortened season, like 22 or 23. I think maybe a few homers are lost going to Chicago. And I'll just say Cam Smith, who didn't even hit that many home runs in college because he kind of hits the ball on the ground a lot, but he does hit it quite hard. I'll just say he's just going to keep getting better, figure it out, and Cam Smith hits more homers than Kyle Tucker.
The reason that this is bold and not heroic is because Cam Smith hits right-handed. And hitting right-handed in Houston makes it, you don't really have to hit it that high. I mean, Cam Smith might be able to hit a ground ball over that fence. And Kyle Tucker moving to Chicago, where down the lines, it's much further back. I think this is maybe even a cold prediction. What's your next one?
Okay. Well, that seems unfair. I mean, the guy, he's... All right. Give me my bold. Listen, I know it's
bold,
a narrative is a layup. Okay. All right. Here we go. One more home run related one. Seattle Mariners. Rowdy Tellez hits more homers than anybody on the Pirates. The fans that were booing him last year, he was seemingly left for dead. The Mariners signed him after spring training began, and he has made the team. He will be DHing for them. He will now have to hit in Seattle, which is not super fun. He has hit, I believe, 13 homers and 15 homers the last 2 years. Did hit 35 in 2022. I don't think he's going to hit 35, but I'm betting against the Pirates and I guess O'Neill Cruz and Brian Reynolds. And I am just riding the Rowdy Tellez. He has like a Vogue style, maybe not all-star season, but it just works. And Rowdy has more homers than one of the Pirates.
The leader on the Pirates last year was Brian Reynolds with 24. I think this is heroic because hitting home runs in Seattle is impossible.
Yeah, I'm trying to will this one into existence. All right, three more. Texas Rangers. Sebastian Walcott plays more major league games this year than Evan Carter.
Great. Heroic. 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 This is also kind of sad when you think about it, but heroic. Yes. Evan Carter, World Series hero in 2023, was injured for basically all of last year, is starting the season in AAA in Round Rock.
After Sebastian Walcott spring.
So Sebastian Walcott is like a 12-year-old Bahamian shortstop.
Okay. If Sebastian Walcott, one of the top prospects in baseball, if he gets up this year, he will be the first teenager to make the big leagues since Juan Soto. He's 19 for all of this season. He would be the first player born in 2006 to make the major leagues. And that would be before anybody born in 2005 would make
the major leagues.
We talked about how Churio was the first 04 baby to be a big leaguer. This is basically like Evan Carter is essentially restarting his minor league development and Sebastian Walcott just like zooms to the big leagues because he's the best prospect in baseball.
Great job.
It is still heroic, but thank you. Okay, great here we job. Go. Two more. Do you want the A's or the Angels?
Angels.
I'm doing going to do the Angels last. Sorry, I'm overriding you. Actually, no, I'll do the Angels. I'll follow you. Okay, here we go.
Just make a decision, big dog.
Kyle Hendricks allows 15 hits in a game. Okay. Nobody has allowed 15 hits in a game in 10 years. It's very hard to do. The last pitcher to do it was Alfredo Simon. But I think that
he killed the guy, right?
No comment. I think that Kyle Hendricks, who will be munching the innings, I think Ron Washington, it'll be a day where it's just like, Wash is going to be like, sorry, man, you just got to go eat it for us, man. You just got to take one for us. And Kyle Hendricks just runs into the wrong team and it's just batting practice because he's throwing 80 miles an hour. I think the most he's ever allowed in the game is like 12, but I think 15 hits is so many hits, especially in 2025 when teams don't get hits. It's not really a thing.
So the way that this happens is he gets hurt like in May so that they can't trade him. And then the Angels are out of it. And then down the stretch, it's just like, go freaking innings for us.
I was thinking, that's possible. Or it's just like the bullpen has been wearing it the previous few nights. And it's just like, Kyle, you're starting. Like, you're just going to go. So I could see it. I could see it both ways. But 15 hits is so many hits.
A's.
I wasn't brave enough to say Anthony Rendon plays a game. All right, A's, here we go. Now, this one also, again, leaning into, everyone's like, A's and Rays are going to be in the playoffs, so we're going to play minor league games, or maybe we're going to play postseason games.
Can I guess?
Yeah, go ahead.
A's worst record in the American League.
No. This is not about how good or bad they will be, although that is funny. This is another funny one just since I'm saying it. And I don't want this because, again, this is too negative and I didn't want to do too many negative ones. Sorry, Kyle Hendricks. One that would be in the spirit of breakout discourse in the other direction would be Lawrence Butler optioned.
Jordan, is that your prediction?
No, of course not. This is my prediction.
How do you say it?
There will be a player who plays for both the Sacramento River Cats and the Sacramento A's this season.
Great.
One of the weirdest things about this situation is that the Giants AAA is just going to keep playing in the same stadium when the YOLO A's are on the road. And I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be a pitcher. What if their trade involves some journeyman gets released and ends up in the A's bullpen? I don't care how it's going to happen. There will be or it could be in the other direction. It could be someone that starts on the A's and gets released and ends up on the AAA team with the Giants. Some player will appear for both teams this season. There you go.
That is great stuff. Heroic. Great job.
Heroic. Okay. Nice. There you go. All right. All right. Finish us off.
The San Diego Padres, who employ Yuli Gurriel, who is 41. Yuli Gurriel homers.
Their bench is, whew, yeah.
Yuli Gurriel homers off a pitcher who was not yet born when Gurriel debuted professionally in Cuba.
Okay. All right. So please remind me when that was.
2001, Yuli Gurriel made his debut as a 17-year-old in the Cuban League. So I'm saying that any pitcher born after 2001 okay. allows a homer to Yuli Gurriel. I already looked. He faced two players last year
who
this works. I think it was Jared Jones and someone else. But Gurriel homers off someone who was not on the planet when he became a professional baseball player.
Paul Skeens. Why not? I'm counting nine pitchers who appeared born in 2002. Yuri Perez, end of the season, if he makes it that far, would be another one. But all right, this is still heroic because Yuli Gurriel homering against anybody this season is pretty... even if he's playing, I'm going under on whatever his home run total is. So this is still heroic. I love it, though. This is a really good one.
I'm high on Yuli. I'm taking the over. San Francisco Giants. Buster Posey, their president of baseball operations, is spotted in baseball pants.
Ooh.
At any point.
I was thinking one like Buster Posey manages a game or something.
Or like catches a bullpen. But that's kind of what I'm saying is Buster Posey in baseball pants.
Man. I think this is bold, but not heroic, because I think he's really committed to like being kind of above it all. I think that he's done. He's really done. So he doesn't seem like the guy that, but, you know, it's like, maybe he just gets that itch. Maybe the Giants are awesome and vibes are high and Buster's like, you know what? I want to go take some BP.
Or I want to go hit some fungos. I want to go hit some fungos.
Sure. Sure. So I'll say bold. This is a really good one, but
thank you.
I'm skeptical. It's good. Strong.
Arizona Diamondbacks. Their new City Connect uniforms, which they are set to unveil at some point this season, somehow make reference to Snakes Alive.
Whoa.
Now, for those of you who don't remember Snakes Alive. Snakes Alive, which if you Google it, Google tells me, an expression of surprise or astonishment, similar to, oh my goodness, or wow. But Snakes Alive was during the Diamondbacks run in 2023. There was a fan who had a sign that was just a white piece of paper with simple caps lock font that just said Snakes Alive on it.
This is why. Oh man, this is such a good one. I want to say this is heroic because, again, like the design elements would be tough to work. But if we're just using the phrase, we're working in the phrase somewhere. This is the big
maybe
white
it's on
jersey.
The bottom of the jersey. Like,
I think it's more likely to be a little bit more subtle. It's like along the collar, right? They actually like make it look more cool or something.
I love the idea of it's just a white jersey with boring black font that just says.
Here's why. This is still heroic because I think you're risking the guy. I should have his name up, but he would start. We might end up in some sort of like legal situation where he's like, Nike, hello, like you owe me money for this. Like,
sure,
this is my thing. So maybe they arrange some sort of partnership. But
Snakes Alive.
Okay. I still say heroic, but I love that one. That's great.
The Los Angeles Dodgers.
Oh, you want to? Okay. You don't want to finish with Dodgers? Okay.
I'll finish with them. Fine. The Colorado Rockies. Mm-hmm. The Colorado Rockies do not win a single game against the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Okay.
They go, okay, oh, I mean, it's 14.
Yeah, it's only 14 games now. So I think this has to be cold. Like, it's okay. It doesn't have to be cold, but again, relative to your other ones, like, I mean, 0-14 is when you factor in the Rocky stuff, but it's totally plausible.
Yeah.
So because it's 14 and not 19, I am going to say it's cold.
Great.
But I'm being harsh because most of yours have been quite strong.
The Los Angeles Dodgers. Now, I had a lot of different ideas here. Okay. I had Dodgers win 130 games.
Mm-hmm, okay? Mm-hmm.
I had Dodgers don't make playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I had Will Ireton's secret wife.
Okay. Yep.
I had Ohtani breaks Bonds' record. I had Ohtani 60-60.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Sure.
But I'm going to go off the field. And I'm going to say that Shohei Ohtani, who is expecting a child this year.
Yes.
Names said child after Mike Trout.
Ooh.
Now, it can be middle name Michael. It can be Michaela. It can be Mickey. It can be Millville Ohtani, whatever. It could be Joe's Diner Ohtani, whatever it is.
Trout then National.
One of Trout National Ohtani.
Joe's, I believe it's Jim's Lunch.
Do you Jim's mean Lunch. Jim's Lunch. Jim's Lunch. Names the kid Jim after Mike Trout's favorite restaurant.
Sorry, if you don't know what Jim's Lunch is, that's okay. You can Google it. Let me just confirm that's correct. This is so funny. Heroic, absolutely, easily heroic. Very funny stuff.
Obviously inspired by Yusei Kikuchi,
yeah,
who named his kid after Dan Vogelbach.
But again, like, by that logic, you should be picking, like, not Mike Trout. Like, you should be picking, like, some other angel that he was tight with.
I understand. But I just think that there was a relationship there that we can't begin to understand, you know? And I think that Mike Trout is a reason that Ohtani went there in the first place. Now, look, you could say he's going to name it after Freddie Freeman or, like, Teoscar, who he's really tight with, whatever. No.
No, I like the angel. I like leaning into that kind of time in his life.
But, names the kid Ipe.
Seems unlikely. All right. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Definitely heroic, though. All right. Well, that was an absolute delight. Thank you for participating. I'm proud of
names
us.
Names the kid Mike Trout.
Mike Trout Ohtani. Let us know which of our bold predictions were your favorites and least favorites, cold, bold, heroic, and we will review these at the end of the season. I look forward to it.
Here's why it's beyond heroic.
Yeah.
I don't think Ohtani has a middle name, and I don't think that middle names exist in Japan. Well, and so
I've been Mike Trout Ohtani, Mike Ohtani.
Mike Ohtani.
Hey, anything
Mike
again?
Mike Ohtani.
We're here getting bold. Jake just doesn't want to be accused of being cowardly, as we all know. All right. Well, again, baseballwarbercast@gmail.com. Let us know what our best and worst bold predictions were. We're going to take a break. When we return, you're going to hear our conversation with Gunnar Henderson. Gunnar, he is starting the year on the IL, sadly, but hopefully he will be back and leading the Orioles and leading the Orioles to 500 combined home runs sooner rather than later. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. We are now thrilled to be joined by one of the MLB The Show cover stars, Mr. Gunnar Henderson of the Baltimore Orioles. Gunnar, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to start with just the idea of playing as yourself in a video game. I would imagine you did that before being on the cover. Where were you when you did that for the first time, and what was that experience like?
It was actually, I believe, it's spring training in 2020. Well, we didn't have one in 2020, so I guess it was either 2020 or 2021 around that spring training time. That was the first time that I got the actual card of myself, the 99 version. So it was really cool being able to do that and kind of show it off to my friends.
So at that point, like, this is a thing I think maybe not a lot of, like, casual people know, that most all players get a 99 of themselves, right?
Yeah, you just have to submit a little form, and you usually get it the next day or two.
And so when you're playing against your buddies, like, from high school, are they letting you play as 99 Gunnar Henderson, or does that need to, like, be removed from the proceedings for fairness?
So what's actually been cool is in pretty recent years, they've added the online 2v2 and 3v3. So I've actually been able to use it with my buddies, not too much against them. So it's fun being able to do that.
They'll happily have you 99 Gunner as a teammate. That seems like a way better situation than having to deal with you on the other side. One of the other cool things, of course, about this year's Zombie the Show is that you do have co-stars on this cover, Paul Skeens and Ellie De La Cruz. Skeens in particular, of course, one of the biggest stories in baseball over this last year. I know you've only got to face him in the All-Star game, but what was that experience like, a unique place to get to face him for the first time? I know you only saw four pitches, but what was it like then, and what are you looking forward to for the next time you get to face Paul?
Yeah, it's very firm, obviously. His fastball is very good, and he's got very good run on his, I guess they're calling it splinker or whatever, kind of like a hard changeup. So he's got some really good stuff. You really got to pick your spots to have a chance.
When you're facing a guy who throws that hard, are you adjusting how hard you're swinging, or are you just kind of sticking to your game?
No, I mean, you obviously have to have intent behind it to be able to catch up to it, but you don't want to sit there and try to match the speed with your swing, because then you're obviously going to get messed up mechanically somewhere and be late. So you just got to swing easy, try to time, get on time with it, and just allow your the path to take over rather than trying to catch up to the speed of it.
The other thing with a guy like Skeens is one of the stories this spring is always adding all these new pitches. When you're a hitter like that, what do you think when you hear about pitchers, especially now you have pitchers trying to add more and more pitches every single winter? As a hitter, I know you can get better at the offseason too, but it's not really the same thing. You can't just add a different swing every winter. So as a hitter who has to face these best pitchers in the world, what is your reaction when you hear that these guys keep adding more pitches?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely tough, especially how hard people are throwing these days. But there's also stuff that I know I myself can work on hitting-wise, and feel like if you iron out all those kind of weaknesses or easy spots to throw pitches to, then it makes it difficult for them to be able to put it over the plate.
You are the first gunner in MLB history. Do you take pride in that? Like, is that a particular – like, obviously being a big leaguer is amazing, right? Like the accomplishment of a lifetime, but being the only and the first gunner, I mean, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. That's pretty cool news. That was new news for me, but yeah, that was it's pretty cool. A lot of people come up and be like, dang, you got such a cool name. But every time that I get to ask the question, like, how'd it come about? And my parents just were like, I mean, just kind of came about. So it's kind of cool being able to have that.
Did you ever meet a G-U-N-N-E-R growing up?
I don't think in person. I mean, I always got my name spelled E-R, even though it's wrong. But yeah, I've never in person.
Okay.
Yeah. It is interesting because if you look up your name, like on Wikipedia, it's basically just exclusively people from Scandinavia, you know, 200 years ago. So you're really also blazing the trail for the Americans, gunners with an A. A lot of pressure, but it seems like you're handling it pretty well. It seems like you do like having kind of a unique name.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely cool being able to have something that's not all out there.
You're not the only Gunnar Henderson in this world, because if you Google Gunnar Henderson football looking for highlights of Orioles shortstop catching a pass, you will not find this gentleman on there, because there was a dude at TCU who I think was like a slot receiver just with your exact name. Have you gotten like tagged and stuff that was meant for him before?
I think for a while on Twitter there, I think I was getting tagged more than him, because I kept looking at my feed. There'd be notifications popping up during football season. And it was just his account being tagged, or my account being tagged, but it was post about him. So I was like, well, I guess I'm a football player now.
So it seems our understanding is that you had a bit of a history playing basketball. I don't know if you had other experience playing football. Did you have a second best sport besides baseball growing up?
Basketball would be my second best sport. I played football up until my 10th grade year, and then that was about it. So, yeah, basketball.
Then you made
a
business decision. You said, thank you, football. Appreciate the memories. Let's go.
Hoop. Yeah, basketball is my very close second favorite. I still love shooting basketball a little bit. But, yeah, it's
do you get shots up in the winter?
I'll go shoot with my little brother, just kind of mess around, shooting the gym. So, yeah, it's just just calm shooting, no pickup games or anything. But
most importantly, before we get back to baseball, can you dunk?
Oh yeah, of course.
Okay. How old were you when you dunked for the first time?
I think the first in-game dunk that I had was in 11th grade. I was, I guess, 16 at the time.
Okay. Can you describe us the play? Was it, did you posterize someone or was it just like a fast break situation?
Funny enough, I actually did dunk it on someone in that one. It was, got a fast break going and he tried to jump up and block it and ended up putting it home. That was the first one. It kind of surprised me because I was like, all right, I'm going to get up really high on this one. And, luckily it went in. So
that dude's leaning back, getting beers with his buddies and being like, I got posterized by MLB All-Star. One of my favorite things from your season last year, there's a video online that the Orioles posted that is every Gunnar Henderson angry walk from 2024. Now, personally, I don't think angry is the right word. I think it's more of like sass than it is anger. But you do treat walks slightly differently. Can you explain why?
Yeah, I mean, well, it was just kind of habit at first. I didn't really think anything of it. And then as the season progressed, like everybody's like, dang, you really not like walks? I'm like, I love walks. It's just, that's just what I do. And then it just kind of like with the hitting group and everything, everybody started to love like kind of doing something after a walk. Cause I mean, you obviously do something for a single, double, triple, homer. So why not do something for a walk? So we all started doing stuff and just kind of caught on after that. So yeah, it was pretty funny.
That is why it is such an amusing video, is because you walk all the time. It's clearly something, as you just mentioned, you do love to do. It is not, so to say that you're angry doing it is not accurate. It seems like you're more pretty excited. Do you guys have a hit by pitch celebration? I know that in college baseball, dugout can get pretty excited when guys wear one. I don't know if that's in the Orioles celebration arsenal, but maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe in the future. It hadn't come about just yet, but maybe something here soon.
A couple quick ones here for you. You know, as somebody who works a lot at deep at bats, do you have a favorite one, an at bat from your career that you're most proud of? Not necessarily like your first hit or your first homer, but just an at bat against a great pitcher where you felt like you worked it really well and got the result you wanted.
I'll say the probably long homer, I think, the Utah Street against Kansas City. That one was just like, I can't remember the exact timing of it, if I had the grand slam before or after, but that one just felt like I finally got to a 3-2 count, got a good pitch over the middle, or like I fouled off a couple early, took a good couple changeups, I believe, and maybe a slider or something like that. And then I got that one and didn't miss it. And that just felt like, all right, now I can finally take a breath. I feel good in the box and actually got some results to show for it. So,
is it more satisfying to homer after a deep count or on the first pitch of an at bat?
Oh, that is a good question, because the first pitch you're like, all right, whatever he gets over the plate, this better be hit hard. And then when you actually do it, it's I don't know. It might have to be the first pitch, just because. I mean, it just sets the tone early.
Well, it sets the tone for like every at bat you have the rest of the day or the rest of the series, right? Because like if you ambush a dude on the first pitch, you're probably getting ball one.
Yeah.
In every other at bat moving forward.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely up there for best feelings and hitting.
So one more question for me is about your good buddy Colton Cowser, and like one of my favorite things about baseball is that you have these people who never would have met or interacted otherwise, becoming really close friends. And like you and Colton are very different folks. You are wired very differently. I'm curious what you have learned from him over the time that you've gotten to know that delightfully goofy individual.
Well, first off, it's his birthday, so happy birthday to him. I've already called him. But he definitely is a funny individual, but he's learning, I guess he's learned how to kind of separate the funniness and then also locking into baseball, which is really cool to see throughout the year, because you want to be light and good mood and good spirits throughout the year. And he's really learned through his minor league days of getting up and doing his work and just doing everything that he possibly can to be the best player that he can be, while also maintaining the funny side of himself. So that's something I feel like is underappreciated, just because the long, grueling season, you want to obviously have good atmosphere in the clubhouse, and he brings that.
If you carry every strikeout, every home run with you like a backpack, it'll weigh you down.
Yeah. I'm curious. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, if you get caught up. I mean, it's very hard to do, but if you get caught up in the results, or very hard not to do, but yeah, I mean, baseball can just drive you into a mental hole, and you just got to have those guys around you that have your back and hold you accountable, yeah. And just be like, hey, it's not the end of the world. So just it like, definitely helps.
If I like was having a crappy couple days and I walked into work and I saw Colton Cowser, I'd be like, you know what? Like, the sun does come out every once in a while.
That's right. Jim. Yeah.
So my last question is sort of similar, a little bit more broad than just Colton, but I'm curious for you as someone who was, you know, drafted out of high school and then, you know, your first full season in 2020 doesn't even happen. I'm curious about that social dynamic with these guys that you've all come up with, guys like Adley drafted the same year, guys like Jordan Westberg, that social group and you guys as a friend group, was it the same way back in 2019 and in 2020 when you guys first met, or has things evolved for you personally as a personality since you were first drafted? What are the similarities and differences since the very beginning when you guys first met in the minors?
Yeah, I mean, we've developed a relationship over the years. And then obviously 2020 was kind of a weird year because the guy like Westy was drafted, but we never even really got to see him or meet him until spring training of the next year. So the relationships just continued to develop and then grown really close. And then, I mean, this year we're all living in the spring training house together. So just shows you how great our relationship is and how much we enjoy being around each other.
Was it tough at the beginning, like being a high school kid and most of these other guys were college?
Not terribly. I mean, Rutz was my first roommate, and then he just, we developed our relationship, and he just was honestly very welcoming in the sense of like, yeah, he's rooming with a high school kid. So he could be like, yeah, what is this guy doing? But he was awesome. I mean, he's one of my best friends, and we've really enjoyed all the time that we spent. And from the first time I met him, he just kind of helped shed light on what's to expect in the baseball world.
My last question here for you is, what is your biggest positive and negative as a roommate?
Mine, it's probably like, I'm trying to think about what I know. The negative is some days I'll usually just want to come in and like grind on a video game or something. So that'll usually carve out like one or two days. So yeah. The positive thing is I'm usually kind of like a Swiss Army knife when it comes to stuff outside. So here we have fishing. So I'll go out there and build a fish, can help with whatever on that. And then, don't bring too much to the cooking side of the table just yet. So, more of outdoors things that I can help with.
Most important, two words in that statement were just yet. Gunnar Henderson, a man always geared towards improvement. We appreciate you joining us. Congratulations on being on the cover of MLB The Show, my friend.
Appreciate it. Thank y'all.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Bold predictions. Gunnar Henderson. And now, the opening day starter draft on this delightful season preview extravaganza. Here's how this dumb game works, all right? Opening day starters delight us because they are the best pitchers. This is the one day a year where we are generally ensured that all of the good pitchers are pitching. Not always the case. Some are hurt. Some are number two starters.
Some like, teams don't have very many good pitchers.
That's another great point. However, for the most part, these are the good pitchers.
Yes.
And our opening day starter draft is a little competition where we draft pitchers and their opening day opponents, and we see who has the better combined ERA. I will end up with 15. Jordan will end up with 15. And whoever has the better ERA at the end of opening day will be the winner. Last year, Jordan smoked me. He took my head and he shoved it in the toilet and he pressed flush. And then he not even like the small flush, the big flush.
Yeah, I did the two, the big flush. Yep.
You did the double, the number two flush. It just destroyed me. His pitchers had a 3.76. Mine had a 5.13. That was helped by Kyle Freeland, who allowed 10 runs to the Diamondbacks.
Helped. And Alex Wood, who started on opening day for the A's, which is bleak. Anyway, okay, so very simple. ERA, combined ERA, 15 starts. Now, the one caveat for this year is that the Rockies and Rays do not play until Friday. We will still tally everything up and give you the results on Friday's episode, but that could maybe sway it at the last minute. Anyway, all that said, we're not going to tell you who all the pitchers are ahead of time, but we are now going to draft. Last year, I took Tarek Skubal with the number one overall pick against the Chicago White Sox, which means you, Jake, especially coming off your massive L, you get to pick first overall this year, and we will go back and forth, not snake, who is the first pick, and you can I'll allow you to keep track on our spreadsheet here.
So I actually tanked last year on purpose to get the first pick this year because there is such an obvious, no doubt, selection on the board. I will take Cy Young hopeful Paul Skenes against the Miami Marlins, who might have the worst offense ever.
Yeah. Great pick.
Thanks.
I'm going to, I'm going to keep it pretty simple and take the guy he's pitching against, and that's Sandy Alcantara with the second pick. There are some other great picks here, and obviously the first few, there's many good selections to go with, but I am going to take Sandy. Very weird that for the Pirates are opening the season in Miami for the second year in a row. That seems a strange schedule quirk. But anyway, I will take Sandy just because that's a fun one. I can't let you get both of those, both of those guys. I expect that to be a low-scoring affair.
So I would say in previous years, there were more obvious picks. You had a lot of aces going against bad teams.
Yep.
You don't really have that this year to the same extent. I think there are not as many no-brainers. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to take the last no-brainer on the board, which is Zach Wheeler in DC against the Nats.
Yep. I think that is a very, very strong pick. I am, do I want to just go with the really bad teams that are left? Not yet. I am going to go with, actually, yeah, I will. Let's just get the, I'm not going to leave the White Sox on the board. Give me Kikuchi. How bad could it go? Kikuchi against the White Sox, and Kikuchi also like really good. Kikuchi was one of the best pitchers in baseball, in the second half last year. And he's facing another offense that could be historically atrocious. So I'll keep it simple.
So one of the interesting parts about this opening day slate is the best pitcher in the world is facing the Dodgers. And so in a usual year, you would take Tarek Skubal first, as you did last year. And because I'm a courageous person, I am going to take Tarek Skubal here.
Okay.
I'm going to bet that him being that good is not going to matter when he's facing the Dodgers.
That's fine. I will then take Logan Gilbert. I'll go homer pick. I'll go Logan Gilbert at home against the A's. Feel good about that.
Strong. I am going to stay in LA and I'm going to take Blake Snell.
I was hoping I could get Snell with my next pick. Okay, nice.
Blake Snell, a pitcher I used to hate watching. I have changed my tune. He will carve up the Tigers at home on opening day in what will be a 0-0 game heading into the 11th.
Okay.
Surely.
Very, very, very solid. I am going to go with, give me Tanner Bibee at Kansas City. Bibee recently extended, and we have expressed our concern about the bottom part of the Kansas City lineup. Maybe Mark Canna will make me look stupid, or Bobby Witt Jr. en route to 12 war. I'll take Tanner Bibee because now again, like, you know, we could pick some other pitchers against bad teams, but there's not that many ones to pick. So what you got?
I think that was a bad pick, especially because I prefer the other side of that matchup, which is Reagans.
Yes.
Cy Young finalist against those Guardians who I think have a worse offense than the Royals.
That could be. That is a very solid pick. Reagans was in my next few. Alrighty. I am gonna go. You know what? Hey, let's no, that seems aggressive.
He's got to make a pick. Doesn't matter, Jordan. Come on.
Ryan Pepiot in place of Shane McClanahan.
Great pick.
Against the Colorado Rockies on the road. I will wait to see if Ryan, if I need Ryan Pepiot on Friday to win this competition, but I will be taking him.
I will take Garrett Crochet making his Red Sox debut in Texas against the Rangers.
Okay.
Very, I just have to say quickly, the quality of the pitchers, we have a very different strategy so far. I'm taking good pitchers. You're taking bad offenses.
Yes. Generally correct. I am going to go with someone who I feel very good. You know what? Let's not overthink this. Chris Sale.
Thank you.
San Diego, Mason Yuli Gurriel.
Yes.
Whoever the hell else is hitting for the Padres after the top six. So at this point, yeah, I'm going to try to load up on some, you know, really good pitchers at this point. Go ahead.
The Baltimore Orioles believe that Zach Eflin is an ace. I don't know if I agree, but I do think he's going to throw well on opening day in Toronto.
Okay. I'm going to go with another one of my favorite pitchers against an offense that might not be super awesome, Pablo Lopez.
I took Pablo Lopez with my first pick last year.
I believe in Kansas City, should I point out, or at least I think it was against Kansas City. So,
it was in Kansas City, yeah.
Yeah, so all right. So don't hate on my Tanner Bibee pick so much.
There are not a lot of good ones left.
A little disrespectful, but it's just the matchups we're a little scared of.
I will take Nate Eovaldi against the Red Sox for the Rangers.
Okay.
Just, it's a little scary to me because Eovaldi, like the Red Sox can hit, but I think that ballpark will keep numbers down enough.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Logan Webb, who in Cincinnati. In Cincinnati is always dicey, but Logan Webb keeps the ball on the ground, and Logan Webb, I don't really see ever like getting bombed out of the second inning in the way that almost any other pitcher. Like he'll at least, even if he allows three, it'll probably be over five or six, and that won't be as painful for my ERA.
I will take Luis Severino in Seattle.
Okay.
If I pitch in Seattle, I think I would take, I might take me in Seattle over Kyle Freeland. Your pick.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a really good one. He was next on my board. All right. I am going to go with, you know what? This is maybe a little optimistic, but I'm going to ride off of what I saw at the end of last year, and I'm going to go with Michael King.
Okay.
Atlanta's is a little scary to face Atlanta. I get that, but Acuña's not playing, you know, they can strike out a bunch.
Sure.
I'll take Michael King.
Some MLB teams when they do a draft have a do not draft label on certain players.
Okay? You have it on Michael King.
I had a do not draft on this matchup because Michael King embarrassed the Braves in the playoffs last year. And I just think the Braves are going to roar back and kick his ass on opening day. So he was a do not draft for me.
All right.
So I just wanted to let you know. Sure. I will select with my next pick, Sonny Gray at home in St. Louis against the Twins. Revenge game.
All right. That's fine. All right. Give me Hunter Green. I'll stick with Cincinnati. Hunter Green's good. And I don't think the Giants lineup is great. So, sure.
The Great American Ballpark for me was a do not draft.
That's fine. That's really valid.
Because I am a courageous man, a brave individual, one willing to run towards the sound of a battle, I'm going to select Clay M. Effing Holmes, New York Mets opening day starter, not a closer anymore, Houston. Against Cam Smith and the Astros.
Love that. All right. I'm going to go with Freddy Peralta.
Okay.
I'm going to go just like, we ain't pitching to Judge. Let's see what the rest of this Yankees lineup can do. Because it's possible it's not very much. We'll see. Between him and Carlo, we'll see who takes our friend Carlos Rodon here. But I'll go with Freddy Peralta with the Yankees new look lineup.
Justin Steele looked catastrophic and rusty in Tokyo. But guess what? Last time I checked, Phoenix, not in Tokyo. I'll take him.
Okay. All right. I then will go with... I can't let him slip past me, so I'm screw it. Sean Burke, let's go. The lower ERA. Hopefully he has a lower ERA than Garrett Crochet on opening day.
As to not ruin our friendship with Carlos Rodon, who you decided to take Sean Burke in front of, I will take Carlos Rodon on opening day at home against the decent Brewers.
All right, that's fine. Carlos was my next pick. I just wanted to stay consistent with my bold predictions. Love. Give me Fromber against the Mets. I just love Fromber. I mean, the Mets, obviously, a good lineup. But yeah, give me Fromber.
I will take Zach Gallen at home against the Cubs.
Yeah. All right.
Kind of a down year for Gallen, like kind of backsliding a little bit. I'm a little low on him right now, but
yeah, but
I'm higher on him than
this could be a steal. And then Cubs offense was sleeping in Tokyo. But again, if they're awake, hopefully like Justin Steele. All right. So three pitchers left. We got Jose Berrios against the Orioles. We've got Mackenzie Gore against the Phillies. And we've got Kyle Freeland at Steinbrenner.
Who will end up on your team, because no way in hell I'm taking him again.
That's true. I'm going to go with Mackenzie Gore. Mm-hmm. Risky, but I think if this was in Philly, I would not. I would have probably take Berrios. But I'll take Mackenzie Gore against the Phillies lineup. That last time we saw him was just rough watch. So maybe that'll continue for one more day before they win the World Series like I'm picking.
Part of growing up is forgiving and forgetting. It is being able to table and pocket transgressions and to learn that most of the time in this world, people are trying their best. Last year, Kyle Freeland ruined this project for me. And now he will be traveling to the minuscule George M. Steinbrenner field to take on an underrated, but still not that good, Rays offense. The angel on my shoulder wants me to be nice and take Freeland. The realist devil on the other shoulder says Berrios versus Baltimore. But I am what did I say earlier, Jordan? I think I'm brave. And so I will. Yeah. I will.
Kyle Freeland, not last pick. Heroic.
I will charge into the fire. And I think this is fine.
He'll have 10 earned runs on opening day last year. It ain't going that bad again. It's just not happening. I will happily take Berrios, who will hopefully give me 5 innings of 3-run ball against your Baltimore Orioles. And we will see. My opening day starters
I just got to say, my pitchers are just so much better than your pitchers, like as pitchers.
Well,
maybe not as
totally,
people.
Totally valid. I will say Freeland on Friday, it'll be interesting if you're sweating that out. You know, it'll be fun to say, but I'll have Pepio. Maybe we get a plot twist and like Pepio gets, you know, crushed. And anyway, I got Team Jordan. Sandy against the Pirates, Kikuchi against the White Sox, Logan Gilbert against the A's, Tanner Bibee against the Royals, Ryan Pepiot against the Rockies, Chris Sale against the Padres, Pablo Lopez against the Cardinals, Logan Webb against the Reds, Michael King against the Braves, Hunter Green against the Giants, Freddie Peralta against the Yankees, Sean Burke against the Angels, Framber Valdez against the Mets, Mackenzie Gore against the Phillies, and Jose Berrios against the Orioles.
I made the bold selection of Paul Skenes first against the Marlins.
Cold.
Wheeler in D.C., Scooble in L.A., Snell against the Tigers, Reagans against the Gardos, Crochet in Texas, Eflin in Toronto, Eovaldi against the Red Sox, Severino in Seattle, Gray against the Twins, Clay Holmes, first start ever? I guess maybe he started for Pittsburgh back in the day. Against the Astros, Justin Steele in Arizona, Carlos at home against the Brewers, Gallen against the Cubs, and Kyle Freeland, my savior, my love, in Tampa Bay. That is our opening day starter draft. We will post some updates of it along the way during games on Thursday. Before we get out of here, though, let's do picks. Why do we hate doing picks? Because we know that we will be wrong. And I hate being wrong. Maybe I need to talk to a therapist about this, but trying to predict the season is a futile exercise. It is impossible. It is pointless. We do not know anything at all. Yeah.
But trying to predict what Shohei Ohtani is going to name his kid, that's easy.
That's easy work. A layup, dog.
You can see our picks on Yahoo Sports. We have the full, got a bunch of pretty graphics with our picks, some of our colleagues' picks. These were less heroic or bold. I think we played it fairly straight.
But at the same time, when you make these picks, you are juggling being boring with being right. Mm-hmm. And I do. This is the deal when you fill out a bracket for March Madness. If you pick every higher seed to win every game, chances are you're going to do well. So, like, if I wanted to be smart and, like, if I had money on this, I would do, you know, Judge Ohtani. You would just pick everything from last year. You just pick the favorite and everything. You do Dodgers over, I guess there's no good AL teams. And now you'd call it a day. But you got to sprinkle in a little bit of spice there every once in a while. And I think that's a good place to start. Jordan Schusterman, let's start with the Cy Youngs.
Oh, okay. You want to do awards first. Okay.
I want to do awards first. Okay. Sure. AL Cy Young pick. This was kind of the spiciest we got. I went with Astro starter Hunter Brown. You went with Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, totally. Hunter Brown was another one. I just, to me, it's as simple as, Scoobal a year ago, it was like kind of a, Scoobal. So Scoobal would have been along those Hunter Brown lines. Chris Sale, I mean, who the hell would have been saying that?
Right.
It's just like the pitching is so hard to predict that we probably should be getting going way more on a limb. Jacob DeGrom, of course, winning Cy Young is not exactly news. But I was like, he's going to do it. He's going to throw 160 innings. And when Jacob DeGrom pitches, he's awesome. So sure, I'll pick him for Cy Young.
For NL Cy Young, I went out on a limb and took Zach Wheeler, or at least that's what it felt like, as the only human being on earth to not pick Paul Skeens, which is a zag for me, a Paul Skeens lover. But great example, right? Like I just wanted to zag. And so I did.
Yep. Totally, totally fine. Rookies of the year. This is where I tried to, there's a little bit more room here for some variance. You went with Kumar Rocker, which is interesting as both Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter have both made the Rangers rotation due to their injuries. I went with Jacob Wilson, with the A's. I know Russ Dorsey also picked Jacob Wilson, I think as part of his Rays hype, but, I think just Jacob Wilson could, hit 300 as a rookie, which is hard to do. And I think that could be enough in a kind of a strange American League rookie class to do that. And then I picked Bubba Chandler in the National League. He's just someone I really believe in. And I think because of the Pirates situation, I know it sounds like Jared Jones not getting surgery. I guess that's good, although he's not going to pitch for a while. I just think Bubba Chandler will force his way to the big leagues and be an awesome pitcher.
I generally believe that having a sprinkle of experience the year prior helps.
Yeah.
And so that's why I took Dylan Cruz for the NL and really wanted to take Jason Dominguez for the AL, but it felt too much like a layup.
I like the Cruz pick a lot more than Dominguez.
We have AL and NL comeback players of the year, one of our favorite awards because, and I would like to propose this. If you miss a year with Tommy John, just Tommy John, I think you should be ineligible for comeback player of the year. Because it is sad that this is true, but that injury is just so common at this point. It's like, okay, yeah, guys come back from Tommy John all the time. It doesn't make it any easier for the player. It just makes it less common. Now, I realize that I have developed this take since I put my pick in, which is Spencer Strider.
Yeah, his was only internal brace, so
that doesn't count.
Less impressive even because he came back faster. I did Felix Bautista and then Matt McClain. Like again, normally it's injuries, sometimes it's off the field stuff.
Matt McClain is a bad pick in my opinion. I'll tell you why.
Okay,
I don't think he was ever good enough for long enough to be coming back to a previous level of success.
That is a fair. That is a fair point. I guess now I am wondering who is the youngest comeback player of the year, because I have to imagine he would be in that mix. So that's totally fair. That's a fair critique for sure. I just didn't want to pick another guy coming back from Tommy John. So
correct. You know, I would put Liam Hendricks on everyone's board as a potential 2-time comeback player of the year award winner, who would join Francisco Liriano, who is also a 2-time comeback player of the year award winner. Jordan and I like the comeback player of the year. We prefer the, hey, come back player of the year, which is when you ask a guy who retired to keep playing. MVPs. Let's do MVPs.
MVPs. I went with, I basically, this is where we can kind of transition to our actual picks. This is where I tried to have some consistency with the story of the season that I was telling. And I went with Yordan Alvarez and Bryce Harper as I am picking the Phillies over the Astros in the World Series. A year ago, I picked the Astros over the Phillies, and that did not work out super well. But I am going to go with Yordan in just, you know, best hitter in baseball type season. And I'm going with Bryce Harper for a Phillies last hurrah, and Bryce Harper needs one more MVP. So
he does.
Again, you know, that's kind of, which of these do you, I assume you like the Bryce pick more than the Yordan pick.
I just think the injuries for Yordan are more prohibitive for putting up a full season of
I'm hoping
production.
With less time in the outfield, that will be less of a concern. But yeah, it's fair. Obviously with Harper, it's, well, again, it's like, would we rather bet against Judge or Otani? That's kind of what we're talking about. if we're comparing the two. You picked Judge and Ellie De La Cruz with the most strikeouts in baseball, of course.
Yep.
Yeah.
I
consider Tatis before I pick Bryce.
Yeah. I think Ellie can just do what Bobby Witt Jr. did last year.
Exactly.
He chases a little bit less. And I think in most seasons, Bobby would have won the MVP. I think that Otani pitching, like, he's not going to go 50-50 again. I just don't think he will. I don't think
he's going to play enough. Yeah.
Yeah, because he's got to come back from pitching. Look, doubting Shohei Ohtani has sunk many people before many times. This year feels a little different to me. I'm ready to be wrong in 3 weeks. So I went with Ellie there. And then AL MVP, like, Aaron Judge, dude, he's so good. I picked him last year. I'll pick him next year. I'll pick him the year after that.
Yeah. I picked Bobby Witt last year, and that was one of my best picks of all of them, for him to even get that close, and it was still wrong. But anyway, all right, postseason picks, and then let's get out of here. This has been a long pod, but this pod's delivered. I've had a great time. I am excited for this baseball season.
Thanks, man.
We sort of already gave these picks over the course of our division previews, but if you didn't listen to those, here we go. I'm going division winners: Red Sox, Guardians, Astros in the American League.
Yeah, come on. I went Red Sox, Tigers, Rangers for my winners. I have absolutely no idea what to think about the AL Central. I ended up just picking the best pitcher, and I sided with that. Why? I don't know. Neither do you. AL West, I went with the Rangers. I think they're going to be really good.
So, wild card, I went Rays, Yankees, Tigers. I'm pretty convicted on the Rays. I feel good about that. I'm fairly convinced the Yankees will find their way back to the postseason somehow. And then that last spot, I went back and forth between the Tigers and Rangers, basically up until I submitted, and I decided to buy into the Tigers infrastructure and direction more than the Rangers roster. The Rangers are way more likely to win 100 games than the Tigers, even 95 games. Absolutely. But I'm just going to take the under on the Rangers.
I think you're out.
But yeah,
I think you're underrating the Rangers infrastructure personally. AL wild card, I went Yankees, Astros, Rays with the Orioles just missing out. I love Tampa's rotation. I think there's a chance if I was able to make these picks after the Shane McClanahan news, it might have changed the calculus for me. Yeah. And after the Orioles signed Cy Young hopeful Kyle Gibson, that changes it a little bit as well. On the NL side, I went Braves, Brewers, Dodgers. You went Phillies, Cubs, Dodgers.
Yeah, again, just sticking with the Phillies as this is the last the last go before it maybe starts to change around there. I'm buying into the Cubs to some degree. We'll see if I regret that. Obviously, Dodgers. Braves, my top NL wildcard team with the Padres and D-backs. And this was more of a diversion, I guess, because in the American League, I had the Guardians in, you had the Rangers in, we had the other teams making the postseason. In this group, we had two differences, as I have the Cubs and, or sorry, I have the Padres and D-backs making it. You have the Cubs and Brewers making it.
Correct. I have the Mets and the Brewers.
And the Mets. Sorry. The Mets and the Mets and the Brewers. So I don't know. I mean, San Diego, San Diego and Texas are maybe comparable. You can see how it could go all right and like 95 wins. And then you're just looking at if it goes wrong and it's like, oh boy, this is going to be a very talented mess. But I'm going to ride with San Diego. And I think I already made my bold prediction, which was the Diamondbacks and Mets finish with the same record as they did a year ago. But this time the D-backs get in on the tiebreaker over the Mets as a karmic retribution for what happened a year ago.
World Series pick. I have the Braves over the Rangers. I think Acuña and Strider will come back and be basically themselves right away. I think the comeback for Acuña is going to be swifter than it was in 2022. I think the Rangers bang. And I think it's going to be a tough travel World Series at my two least favorite stadiums in baseball between two spectacularly entertaining, phenomenal ball clubs.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a totally valid pick. I went Phillies over Astros. Phillies, I've made clear. I just, you know, I don't have to explain why I think they're good. I'm going to end on this point as we wrap up and we get ready for opening day. Not necessarily just about the Astros, but I do think that, and this point has been made, but as I have just kind of sat down and thought about this season and what I'm excited about, I do really think that the American League being as just all over the place as it is setting up for a very, very fun season. I think having 12 teams that can be like, yep, maybe, is cool. I know that part of that is the product of, you know, some teams just staying in the middle.
What teams did you take out of that? Anaheim, Sacramento, and Chicago?
Yeah.
I think the A's can
drink. And the A's, sure. You could say 13. 12 was whatever. But sure, yeah, fine. Yeah. I mean, I think the fun thing, I think on Fangraphs, like, again, you can roll your eyes at the projections, but I believe they have those 12 teams projected for within 7 wins of each other, which is just, we know that's not how it's actually going to go. So, but that's just, that tells you a lot about the flaws and the strengths of this many teams going into a season where it's, I think that makes for a lot of fun.
So a year ago, the Yankees had the most wins in the American League. They finished with 94. Does an American League team eclipse that this year?
Yeah.
I'd say no. I think
that's a great question.
Now, there's two ways to think about it, right? It's just like everyone's fine. Even the Yankees last year were not necessarily a juggernaut. They were the best team and they were a good team. But they didn't, as we saw in the World Series, they were overmatched.
Yeah.
Does one of these teams emerge as a juggernaut that we don't see? Right. Or is it a similar situation to last year where the best team is pretty good?
And at the very least, it looks like we're heading towards a situation where the National League fans are like, oh, we're, you know, 5 games out of the wild card and we, you know, kick the crap out of the second place AL wild card team. You know, this is totally imbalanced, which whatever. This is all cyclical and who knows how this will shake out years from now. But I do think that dynamic in the American League, because of all the injuries, because of all the moves, is one of the macro things I'm most excited about. All right, Jake. Well, this was a long podcast. This was a fun podcast. Hopefully this got people excited for opening day. Thank you to Carter Singh for producing. Thank you for providing us with some heroic predictions, not just bold. You can email us, as I said, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Opening day is tomorrow. You will be in the Bronx watching Carlos Rodon against Freddie Peralta. I will be at this desk watching as many games as I possibly can, as the Guardians home opener is not till April 8th. But I will be patient and I will enjoy the baseball on the television. Thank you guys for listening to us all off season long. We are so excited to be back 3 times a week and doing another full season here, Baseball Barbercast with Yahoo Sports. It has been so much fun so far. We are excited for another full season. Thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you soon.